You're tuned in to Under the Radar here on Radio Islam International. My name is Ibrahim Musa, and we are talking about Uyghur issues at the moment, a very, very important concern coming up from a recent seminar which focused on where are the imams, speaking about the imams in the Uyghur area of China, while speaking at a webinar hosted by the Uyghur Human Rights Project titled "Where Are the Imams? Evidence for Mass Detention of Uyghur Religious Figures," a Norway-based activist with the International Cities of Refuge Network, ICORN, Abdul Wali Ayyub, informed that based on interviews with Uyghurs, at least 613 imams were removed from the community in a campaign of extra-legal incarceration that has already seen millions of Uyghur Muslims held in concentration camps since early 2017. Joining us on the line is Abdul Wali Ayyub himself. He's a Uyghur language activist, a linguist, a professor, as well as I mentioned, they're activists with the International Cities of Refuge Network. Joining us from Norway this evening. Abdul Wali, great speaking to you. Shukran for your time and assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor having you on board this evening, and a different element of the Uyghur crisis, the Uyghur genocide, if you'd like, that we have not heard about or we haven't spoken about previously. I just want you to first put us in the picture when we talk about the imams. How does this fit into the broader atrocities and the broader, concentration camps, etc., that have been meted out against the Uyghur population? So just locate for us this particular crime within the broader crimes.
Because imams, like Islam, is the main pillar of Uyghur culture, and imam is community leaders, as every Muslim know in the world, and they are presiding Uyghur funeral, wedding, and delivering ceremony. And they are the local authority, like in Chinese government, they are challenged to Chinese authority because Chinese authority wants to dominate Uyghur with the communist ideology. And Islam is the main target for them because of it's the challenge for communist ideology. That's why those imam targeted. That's why the people there targeted in, they're put in concentration camp.
So the role of an imam, we know it, Abdul Wali, in different parts of the world, that the prayer leader, they deliver sermons on a weekly basis, they deliver lessons to their communities, they educate the children, preside over community ceremonies, etc. Imams, the Uyghur imams that we're speaking about, typically would be doing all of that, or would they, given the context of suppression, would they be taking on bigger roles than that because of the situation and the circumstances their community finds themselves in?
Yes, something is special for Uyghur Muslim, and because mosque is the last place we can speak our Uyghur, and the imam is the last one who are holding Uyghur community and holding Uyghur people together, because the imam preside the religious ceremony in Uyghur, and the mosque is our last place who can practice our culture and especially our Uyghur language in that place. So that's our last place to protect ourselves.
One would imagine then, though, that because the intense scrutiny of every aspect of Uyghur life, these community leaders, and because of the role that they play, would become perhaps the chief targets of the operations of the communists.
Yes, you are right. For example, that after this 2017 mass arrest happened, and I interviewed the scholars, and they stayed in Kashgar and Urumqi different time after 2017, And one scholar from Sweden, he told me that, like, he said, I can tell you one fact only. That one is, people are not afraid of living. People are afraid of dying. Because those imams already arrested, and there is no one to preside the funeral right now. Because of, like, those cremation building is just very close to the concentration camp, and every village they have a cremation. We cannot cremate. We are Muslim, but in every village there is a cremation, like a bureau or cremation branch department, something. So people afraid of dying because of like when that happened and what their body will face and what they face. What can they, like, how can they be buried? It's the serious problem for Muslim right now. So they are afraid of dying. He told me that after I talked with some Uyghurs secretly from Chinese provinces, not our like province, and they told me the same thing, that people are afraid of this because those imams disappeared, like, very in a very short time, and it's very hard to, like, imagine how those people can manage this funeral, something like that.
To take a step back, Abdul Wali, tell us about the destruction of mosques and religious infrastructure in the Uyghur regions. You know, to what extent has that been carried out until this point in time? And once the physical structures have been destroyed, and if the imams are still not, you know, arrested or face all sorts of, you know, harsh treatment, where do these imams go if the physical base has been destroyed?
The first of all, the mosque destroyed, and it started in 2016. And since 2016 until now, depending on the New York Times, reported 16,000 mosques destroyed, and Uyghur shrines also destroyed. It's very shocking because in Kashgar we have a very famous like shrine of Uyghur king in the history. It was destroyed. It's very big, like, actually my ancestors and our, like, forefathers are there. So it's very shocking to the people that, like, mosque demolished and those shrines also destroyed. And it's like a psychological like disaster for the people in front of them, like the historical mosques, like at least one mosque I know in Kerala, it's 800 years, and another mosque in Kashgar, our Kargil county, it's more than 500 mosques, 500 years of history. I have visited those mosques, and those mosques disappeared after this 2017, and people shocked what's happening. It's not only people shocked their family members arrested, they shocked that what's happening in front of them.
And thereafter, you know, after the shocking erasure of religious infrastructure, you know, many scholars were arrested at the same time. Those who've managed to stay, have they been able to perhaps continue to fulfill their functions within their homes or others' community spaces?
It's actually some scholars still outside, and like in China, the policy is sinicize Islam. It means that Islam should be in Chinese communist characteristic. And we have an Islamic Institute in Urumqi, and the school is still going on, and they are still teaching students. But the problem is they are teaching with, like, communist thick slum. It's different type of slum in Chinese character, Chinese styles. It's also like emotional and the psychological torture for the people, because like when you go to mosque, you have to like because we have tasbih after praying. But you have to say that, like, long live Xi Jinping, long live Communist Party, and long live China. This is the tasbih after pray. So even, like, some of the people have this chance to pray, but they have to repeat this three tasbih instead of we should say as a Muslim. So this is also psychological torture for the people who are not arrested. They are still in the mosque, but they have to practice their Islam in the way of Chinese government asked them to do.
Tell us more then about the imams at this point in time, those that have been arrested. Where are they? What are the conditions that they are facing? Do we have any kind of communication with them?
Most of the imams now already sentenced. And some of them in labor camp, forced labor camp, but most of them already sentenced. And I know some imams. They are in Tumshok prison. And one of the imam I know very well. I have met him, and he is above 90 years old. His name is Abedin Ayub, and he is in Tumshok prison. And but we cannot contact any one of them. And we cannot contact their family members in our Uyghur region. And we can only confirm those cases through their family members in the U.S., like that Abedin Ayub's family members in the U.S. And some of them we can confirm that it's in Chinese media. Like Chinese media already reported some of them already sentenced. And reported that they are extremists, terrorists, and the separatists. And because of this, and we know where they are. And but the problem is, they don't have any lawyer, and they don't have any like chance to meet to talk with us, because the internet and the international phone call already cut down. So we cannot call, or we cannot receive our phone call. This is the problem to tell entire story, because the connection problem, there is no like connection between Uyghur in diaspora and Uyghur inside China.
Now, as far as the social or societal implications of this with these scholars / community leaders removed, what kind of vacuum has this left in Uyghur society? And, you know, is there any way of even fulfilling that? And what would be the long-term repercussions of having that vacuum of community and religious leaders?
Depending on the Chinese, some Chinese social media, it's still allowed. For example, that TikTok, it's allowed in China. And WeChat, it's allowed in China. And we can use that chance to see what's happening right now and what impacts to the community. Now, from the TikTok, we can see that, like, in our Uyghur culture, like, women don't drink in public. They don't smoke in the public. It's our culture. But the problem is from the like WeChat video or like TikTok video, we can see that people are drinking. Like ladies are drinking outside, and like kids are going to the pub, like a nightclub, something like that. It's like because of social control already disappeared, so some bad things already like open right now because of there is no Islamic like control there, and there's no Islamic teaching there. So the people, the behavior, it's hard to control themselves. It's some way. And another thing, that it is also encouraged by Chinese government. So break the traditional law, to break traditional custom, and like in face or like embrace so-called modernity. It means nightclub, drinking, using alcohol, and smoking for ladies, something like that. So it is the disaster for Uyghur community. Another thing that because of Uyghur imams arrested and like over a million people arrested, and depending on the German TV recently reported that 900,000 Uyghur kids also in the concentration camp. The problem is because of they are in like boarding school, so-called, but they cannot access their language, their culture. I like mostly concerned the older aged imams who are above 90 or 80 years old. Also, I concern those kids, innocent kids in boarding school without their culture, without their language. And those kids are our future. And without those kids, how can we keep our culture alive? How can we keep our language alive? That's the main concern for me right now for the old people who are in prison, because I have stayed in prison before. Like for elderly people, it's not easy to mingle with those like hard physical works. And another thing that like I had the kindergarten in Kashgar when I was in 2011, and those kids are innocent, and it's really easy to like teach them the language and like force them to forget their roots. And those kids, like, imagine 900,000 kids without their parents, they're in boarding school. Like, if we wait like this, if we wait like this, after 10 years, our kids cannot speak their language, and those kids, they don't have their grandpa and grandma. And what will happen?
It's certainly a very distressing situation, and I think only going to be perhaps more distressing with the next issue I want to bring up, because I mean, one is the assault from the side of the communists, and yet we also have an assault seemingly on Uyghurs and Uyghur scholars from Muslim countries themselves, in the holiest of places. It seems as if their trust has been betrayed. People who are going for Hajj or Umrah, their your very sacred intention for a journey like this has been betrayed by their arrest in Saudi Arabia. 52-year-old Uyghur religious scholar Aymatullah Wiley and another Uyghur man, Nur Mehmet Rozi, were recently arrested by state security in Saudi Arabia. They've now been incarcerated, and they risk being deported back to China. Tell us a bit more about this case.
I know these two men, and they have a Turkish long-term residency, and they went to Saudi Arabia to Umrah Hajj. And people in China, we already lost our belief there, and we cannot practice our belief. The people in Turkey and people in Saudi Arabia, they feel they are free. And they feel they are free to go to Mecca and to go to like practice their culture and practice their Islam. But the problem is, we have never thought that it is also crime in the world. It's also crime in the free world. It is also crime in the Mecca. I have never imagined like that. Like, we can understand, because it's a communist country in China. They like persecute us and like forbid our, restricted our religion. We can understand that because they are communists. But the problem is, in Mecca, in Saudi Arabia, you are Hadimul Haramein. And what happened to you? Arrested those two Uyghur who going to pilgrimage? I think it's not understandable. It's not acceptable to as a Muslim. And the problem is, if you claim Uyghur cannot practice their Islam in Saudi Arabia, you should claim that. Claim that we cannot protect Uyghur. Uyghur Muslim is not protectable in our like in true haram, and then we will not go. The problem is, you accept us, you gave us a visa. and after we go, and you arrested us, and we know Saudi Arabia already deported five Uyghurs to China. And this time, arrested two Uyghur religious figures, and they are in Saudi jail. And what happened to you? It's shame. Shame on Saudi Arabia, and shame on, like, how can we accept that? How can we explain to our Uyghur brothers and sisters in the world?
And this, as I understand, is not the first case. We've got other cases in Saudi Arabia as well of deportations or arrests prior to this incident as well of Uyghurs.
Yes, it happened before, like in 2017 and 2018, Saudi Arabia deported five Uyghurs. And among them, I know three of them very well. And one is my friend. His name is Nurullah Abdulhamid, Nurullah. And he deported, and after three Uyghurs deported, all of them go to Saudi Arabia, go to Mecca to Hajj. It's another occasion, like, it's happened again. And what happened to them? And, like, do you have a court in Saudi Arabia? If they have any, like, a crime, why don't you punish them in your country, in Mecca? Why do you deport them to China? What's wrong with you? And we need the explanation, but we didn't have any explanation from the Saudi government. But this time, they arrested another two Uyghurs.
And with a very grave risk that they could be deported back to China anytime now?
Yes, of course, because we try to hire a lawyer, but the problem is any lawyer, we tried different times, any lawyer afraid of this case is political, because after we told them, they said that this case is political, we cannot have it. They always avoid. The problem is we cannot have a lawyer, and we cannot directly ask any Saudi officials, and the problem is we don't know where they are. And some people already said that they already deported to China, but I don't believe that. So, I believe human rights organization, I believe Saudi Arabia will not make this mistake.
Because, they guaranteed international protection by, international human rights organizations, United Nations bodies, etc. Have you got any success from such bodies to demand accountability from the Saudis in this case?
I don't know, because, Alhamdulillah Valley already had the paper of UNHCR. But the problem is UNHCR until now didn't say anything about that. Only Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch are talking about this issue. But I can tell you, they cannot guarantee. Human Rights Watch cannot guarantee. Nobody can guarantee for deportation. But we are in frustration right now. Uyghur community in Saudi Arabia and Uyghur activists in the world, we are in frustration. Because we don't know. We cannot have a lawyer, and we cannot ask the Saudi government. And even we asked, I called. But the problem is no one answered the phone.
Just two final questions on this very disturbing topic this evening. Uyghur imams, one Uyghur imams within Uyghur regions, and the persecution meted out to them. And now, unfortunately, Uyghur figures, even in Muslim lands, where countries seem to be doing the bidding of China, and giving them a similar type of treatment that they actually achieve under the communists. My penultimate question is, Uyghur imams who have managed to leave China, do we have a number of those? Where are they in the world today? If they had managed to leave,
no, it's not possible to leave. They are already most of them are in prison, and some of them in labor camp, and they cannot leave the country. And yes, some of them left the country before mass arrest happened. They are just like Hamdullah Valley, arrested in Saudi Arabia. And those people who left the country, we cannot protect them. Even some of them leave, how can we protect all of them? Mm. It's better to stay there, and because nobody can protect us. So it's better to stay there.
The final question, you know, when we come to a Muslim response, Abdul Wali, we have the responsibility as Muslims to be able to respond to human suffering, you know, where it is the sacredness of human life. But I guess it goes one notch beyond that because of the solidarity of faith. And it goes even a notch above that when we're talking about religious scholars who have a very special place within the Muslim community and a special role within the Muslim community. What is your assessment on the way the Muslim community, the Muslim Ummah, Muslim countries, Muslim citizens around the world have responded? And do you think there's a massive failing, there's a massive apathy perhaps with regard to the Uyghur plight in general, but more specifically as we're speaking about this evening, the Uyghur imams?
I feel very disappointed this time because of we cannot protect those imams in our homeland, East Turkestan, and we cannot protect those imams in our sacred place like Mecca. So I'm totally disappointed. Like, it's no safe haven for Uyghurs. We are in danger, especially in Muslim world. For example, that Uyghur deported in Emirate, UAE, and Uyghur deported from Egypt, and Uyghur deported from Turkey, and Uyghur deported from Malaysia in 2017. Those Muslim countries deported Uyghurs. So we don't have any safe haven in Muslim country. And what we should do? This is the problem right now. And who can protect us? And how can we face our Muslim brothers and sisters there? If we will see them in lifetime, and we will see them in Akhirat, in Qiyamah, how can we face them? If we believe in Qiyamah, if we believe in Allah, if we believe in, we can see in the future, in front of Allah, how can we face them? How can we tell? It's shame. It's shame on us, every one of us.
Just in conclusion, anything specific you can recommend for ordinary citizens, ordinary Muslims around the world, what can they do? Again, Uyghur in general, but as our discussion has been going this evening, Uyghur imams, what specific measures do you think can be meaningful?
I think we can write to Chinese embassy in our country. And because we already enlisted their names and enlisted their address, and we can write the Chinese embassy about them, release those imams. This is the one thing we can do. And second thing, that we can protect Uyghur brothers and sisters living in a Muslim country, not only Muslim country, around the world. And we can also send letter to Chinese Islamic Association in Beijing, and we can also send that letter to a Chinese Foreign Department, Foreign Ministry, and we can also write to Chinese Political Consultant Assembly. It's the place so-called just like a parliament, and they have some bureau about Muslim minority in China. And we can also If we can also boycott Chinese products, and we can ask our Chinese company in our country and ask them not to use Uyghur forced labor products. And we can also support the Uyghur organization in our country, in different country in the world. And we can also provide help those Uyghurs in our country. And we can also send letters to prisoners again and again, keep writing them, and ask, let them know that in the world, somebody is taking care of them. Like, keep writing letters to Chinese government that in the world, we are taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
We know what's happening. And bombard their, email address and bombard their, mailbox.
Absolutely important pointers there, to stop the sense of alienation and apathy that unfortunately you've pointed out this evening that Uyghurs are feeling acutely, not only in their homeland, but in the Muslim world and all over the world where they seem to be going. Abdul Wali, I thank you so much for this very, very important discussion this evening. I, with your permission, would liaise with you for a future discussion, I think, which would also be important on your own personal story, as well as the role of language, preserving language, the Uyghur language that you've obviously championed. We haven't got time to get around to that one, but hopefully in the future it would be a very important discussion to share with our audience as well. But for the moment, I thank you for your time. Shukran and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Well, thank you for giving me this chance to talk about Uyghur Imams.
Abdul Wali Ayyub, Uyghur language activist and linguist, activist with the International Cities of Refuge Network, joining us from Norway this evening.